The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, plus a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to a special Saturday edition of Coffee House Shots. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and James Forsyth. On Friday, we heard Alex Salmond address MPs from the Scottish Parliament. After much rescheduling, James, finally the former First Minister did give evidence relating to the Salmond inquiry, and this has implications for Nicola Sturgeon. So what do we learn?
I think that there were three big standout moments to my mind. First, Alex Salmond's final word, in his final statement, he's essentially said to the committee, if you want to get a hold of this evidence, you should serve an order on my solicitors, because they want to comply with your requests to produce these text messages that Alex Salmond kept referring to, which he said were the most kind of shocking day of his life when he read them, which he claims proves what he is alleging about an attempt essentially to use the legal process to take him out as a political figure. That was thing one. The second thing I think was that Alex Salmond seemed to go out of his way to contradict Peter Murrell's sworn evidence to the committee. And I think it's very hard to see how the committee doesn't once again write to Peter Murrell and ask him to come back and explain the discrepancies between what Peter Murrell said on oath to the committee and what Alex Salmond said on oath to the committee. And then I think the third thing is this issue of whether one of the names of the complainants was disclosed to the Salmond team. And Salmond said that that had happened and that there were three people who could testify to that effect. I think that is very significant because one of the big arguments throughout this process has been that the reason that evidence is being redacted, evidence is being withheld, is to prevent the jigsaw identification of the claimants. If the Scottish Government side of this were careless with the identity of the complainants and their anonymity, then I think that is a very serious matter. And so I think those were, to my mind, the three standout moments from his testimony.
Fraser, Alex Salmond said he had no doubt that Nicola Sturgeon had breached the ministerial code, ultimately giving an account, a version of events that did not correlate to Nicola Sturgeon's. How much trouble do you think the First Minister is in from what you heard today?
I think the potency of what happened yesterday wasn't really in what Alex Salmond said. Remember, this kind of psychodrama has been running in Scotland for 2 or 3 years now, so anybody that interested will already know every twist and turn. The real dramatic moment came in the lengths which Nicola Sturgeon and her allies went to stop Alex Salmond ever giving evidence in the first place. You'll remember, Katie, that a couple of weeks ago, The Spectator took the pretty unusual step of going to the High Court to seek clarity, because at the time, the Scottish Parliament was saying, no, we're actually not even going to publish Alex Salmond's evidence, and if we can't publish his evidence, then he won't be able to give evidence in person. So this whole thing almost never happened, because the Scottish Parliament's investigating committee was saying that if we do publish his evidence, if we do hear from him, he's going to identify the woman who complained against him. Now, that was simply a lie. We know that because we at The Spectator actually published Salmond's evidence on our own website. Anybody has been able to read it for weeks. You can see it identifies no one. But still, they were clinging to that excuse. So that's why we went to the High Court and we asked Lady Dorrien to rule. Was there any legal impediment, we asked, to stop the Scottish Parliament seeking his evidence, hearing what he has to say, and then scrutinising him, asking him questions? This is what democracy is supposed to be all about. It's not about cover-ups. It's not about thinking of legalistic ways to stop accusations being made against the First Ministers. Democracy is about hearing what people have to say. Alex Salmond might have come up with something fantastical. It could be a crazy conspiracy theory, or he might be absolutely correct. We'll never know if we don't hear what he has to say. So that's why we went and took this pretty expensive legal action. And I'm glad we did, because this was really about the wheels of democracy turning. And it was also letting Scotland see the steps taken to stop those wheels from turning. And the end result, I think, was as dramatic a moment as any that I've covered in 20 years of political reporting. You had Alex Salmond make the case, quite powerfully, I thought, that the devolutionary dream had been sullied, that the vandalism done to the devolutionary settlement was quite extreme, and that the Crown Office, the government prosecutors, had no place, absolutely no place, in telling the Scottish Parliament what it could and couldn't publish. Westminster would never, ever have accepted that kind of legalistic interference in the democratic process. Yet this took place in Scotland as if this were an everyday occurrence. It was not. It was a corruption of democracy, a corruption of the ideals of devolution, and that it was even attempted makes Alex Salmond's point that there were forces up there to stop things from ever coming to light in the first place. So I do think that the events of this last week in general will certainly have let Scots know that something has gone deeply wrong in the Scottish Parliament, and that a lot of very powerful people try to stop Alex's voice from being heard at all. He hasn't given interviews, as he said in the committee. He's kept unusually quiet in all of the time since he was acquitted of the charges in court last year. He wanted to speak today. It was right that he spoke in Parliament, and right, I think, that we went to the High Court to do what we could to let the evidence take place. And now people can judge for themselves whether his story was convincing or whether it was not.
James, where does it go from here? There's lots of claims and assertions in today's evidence that have made the news. But I think given the case is in a way complicated, it's hard for listeners and others to work out exactly how much peril this puts Nicola Sturgeon or her allies in. So what are the next steps here? Are we going to hear more from figures addressing the inquiry in the coming weeks?
So we have both the Lord Advocate and Nicola Sturgeon due to appear early next week at the inquiry, and you could tell that at various points Alex Salmond was essentially priming the committee to ask Nicola Sturgeon various questions. And I think Nicola Sturgeon is on in very difficult territory about why she didn't immediately inform the civil service of the meeting that she had at her house of Alex Salmond. That seems to me dubious that she did not. And I think this is getting very difficult for Nicola Sturgeon. Now, I think you saw from today that there are various SNP members of the committee who will try and do everything they can to help her. But I think you saw in the question from Jackie Bailey and Murdo Fraser that, you know, there are some sharp people on this committee, and I think Nicola Sturgeon is going to have a very tough time on Tuesday. And I think Nicola Sturgeon's strategy here, I think it is hard to see, based on everything we know, how Nicola Sturgeon didn't break the ministerial code in this respect, which is, when Alex Salmond turned up at her house to talk to her, her defence is she thought this was party business, not government business. Even if she thought it was going to be party business, it clearly turned into government business. At which point she surely should have immediately phoned the Permanent Secretary of the Scottish Government and inform them of that fact. I think that is a struggle for her to answer that. And I think that things get very difficult. I think it's also, Alex Salmond said, that the judicial review, you know, the reason the Scottish Government had to drop it, he claims, is the counsel hired by the Scottish Government told them that the case was unarguable. You know, it wasn't just that they were likely to lose, you just couldn't actually put it was so weak. I think if these things, as Salmond describes them, are accurate, then Nicola Sturgeon is in a very difficult position. Now, we have seen with Priti Patel that it is possible to be found to have broken the ministerial code and not resign. That was a departure from constitutional convention, which was if you were found to have broken the ministerial code, you had to go. But I thought you saw in Jackie Bailey's question, she was trying to get at this point, which is, if you misled Parliament and then realised you had misled Parliament and did not correct the record, the severity of that error. I think Nicola Sturgeon is in a very difficult situation right now. And I think it is hard to think that things have worked as they ought to have worked in the Scottish Government in its handling of this case. In the same way that when you listen to the Salmond trial, it was hard to think that things had worked in the way that they should have worked, given the evidence that was produced then.
Fraser, Our resignation's inevitable, and by that, it might not be Nicola Sturgeon's resignation. There are plenty of other people accused, embroiled in this whole saga. Do you think there has to be a fall guy?
I'm not sure there is going to be a fall guy or a fall girl here. I mean, as Alex Salmond himself pointed out, we've got to this stage with the Scottish Government basically admitting illegality, admitting it got it wrong, to the most outrageous kind of mistakes in the way it went about this affair without anybody resigning. So I don't think so now. And let's remember that voting for the Scottish Parliament election starts in just 4 weeks' time. Nicola Sturgeon is on a war footing. Even if she does want somebody's head, she's going to wait until after the election, I imagine, to call for that head. But right now, she will be thinking to herself, right, I've managed to survive this long. I've even got to this stage with the polls showing I'm going to win a majority of votes in the multi-party system and the May elections. So what can change now? Now, the thing that can change for her is not necessarily any dramatic twist here, not any new piece of information, because anybody who cares about this will have not learned anything technically devastatingly new today. What will change is a general sense that her party is now too powerful in Scotland, that it was a mistake to give the SNP the majority control over Parliament, and that it is now abusing that power in the way that it picks committee chairmen, in the way that it leans on the prosecutors to try to get its will, in the way that it's using power formally and informally to turn what ought to be a thriving democratic system into a one-party cabal. Now, you don't have to be a unionist to be worried about that kind of thing. And I think what the difference now might be, what happened to Britain when Theresa May went to have her general election. The alternative was Jeremy Corbyn. And yes, the country did not want Corbyn as an alternative, but nor did they want Theresa May to have a stonking great majority, because the electorate could just sense that she would have turned into a monster. She simply was not fit to wield that majority. And I have to say, in all the general election results of recent years, that one was my favourite.
Fraser, I remember calling you to let you know the result of that election, and you said only bother to wake you up if it's either a three-figure majority or below 20. And I had to call you and break the news that it was supposed to be, according to the exit poll, a hung parliament. And you seem quite amused.
It was. I forgot. What was my reaction, Katie? Did I thank God or something like that?
I think I remember you bursting into laughter.
Well, let's face it, it was quite funny, wasn't it? A snap election. But here's the thing. There is something about our democratic system where the electorate can just sense if somebody is getting too powerful. And Theresa May was. She was had this terrible kind of heavy-handed Theresa May kind of one-person party. I'm going to do that. Treating her cabinet like they were little servants, not even telling them what's going to be in the manifesto. My point is, when voters sense somebody's getting too powerful, they have a way of cutting them down to size. Now, it could well be, after witnessing the astonishing abuse of power we've seen from Nicola Sturgeon. I don't mean legal abuse, because everything she's been doing is actually legal. Morally, it is just wrong to use the Crown prosecutors to try to put a chill over the Scottish Parliament, to try to withhold evidence from being given in that Parliament. So that kind of behaviour might lead enough people to think, well, perhaps we'll keep her as First Minister, make her the biggest single party, but an SNP majority is something which is now something to be feared because of the way that majority control is then being enacted in Scotland. We've seen this beautiful creation of devolution, something which I believed in very, very strongly when it was created. We have basically seen it being vandalised and corrupted by too much power being focused in the hands of one party. And I think that, rather than anything Alex Salmond has said and done, might be the lingering memory that Scots have when they go into the polling booths. Now, I might be wrong and she might win a huge majority, but I think the threat to her isn't anything Alex Salmond has said. The threat to her has come from the SNP's own overreaction and its attempt to suppress the story Alex Salmond has given and the attempts it made to make sure that story was never told in the first place.
James, has Boris Johnson just had his best news yet on his union strategy?
Well, there are times when you think. David Cameron once described Boris Johnson as a greased piglet for his ability to escape from trouble. And it is remarkable that the single biggest threat to Boris Johnson, premiership, I think, is the Scottish situation now. And you see today, Alex Salmond, the person who led the Yes campaign in 2014, as Alex Massey, our Scotland editor, said, essentially saying that at this moment in time, Scotland is not ready for independence because of the state of its current leadership. That has to be a huge boon to the unionist cause. And I think you saw Alex Salmond trying to walk this tightrope of setting out his issues with Nicola Sturgeon and how the Scottish government had handled things, but not trying to undermine the cause of independence. I personally think it is impossible to think that he hasn't, at least in some way, undermined the cause of independence, because as you listen to this today, you did think, you know, that the independence cause is so personally associated with Nicola Sturgeon now, but anything that hurts her, I think, hurts the cause of independence. You know, I mean, if you look at the kind of polling evidence and the rise in support for independence, it is Sturgeon has enabled it to reach parts of the electorate that it previously could not. And so I think anything that harms Nicola Sturgeon harms the cause of independence.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Fraser. And thank you for listening.